Speaking of tools and trying to find the holy grail solution, what led me onto the mechanical keyboards thing was seeing Lenovo's most recent laptop, not most recent, but their most recent ThinkPad, the Generation 12 X1 Carbon.
That pull request has not been rescinded yet.
Those motherfuckers are shipping the keyboard. They're shipping this laptop with the keyboard with the thumb pad reader, not the thumb pad reader. What is this thing called?
Fingerprint reader.
That's a fingerprint reader.
Yeah.
Fingerprint reader has overtaken, it has usurped the position of the print screen key to the right of the spacebar. And it made me think, like, all right, I need a different solution. I can't do this. Like, I can't rely on this one company to make my laptop forever. And it's one of the reasons why I was using this laptop. It's so that I could not be locked into a particular laptop. Yeah. So it was like, this laptop provided me with the ability to not be loyal to this laptop. And now I'm doing the one-time cashing in on this ability that I had, which is I'm free. I'm free from the Lenovo ThinkPad. I might still buy another ThinkPad, but now that these motherfuckers have taken away my print screen button, it's really made me think about what kind of keyboard to get next. And I was like, well, okay, I could be in control of what my keyboard looks like. There's this community called the Ergo Mechanical Keyboard Community that just makes their own keyboards. Mostly they make their own keyboards. It's becoming like a little bit more open in the sense that there are places like ZMK. Is it ZMK? It's the company that makes the Ergo Docs keyboard. That's like their first offering that I guess came along something like 10 years ago. It's like this funky looking keyboard with like two thumb clusters, and it has like a, not a staggered layout. So like generally speaking, keys on a keyboard, like kind of go up and to the left like this.
Yep.
But that's bad. Like keyboards should be oriented like in a grid. And if there's any kind of staggering happening at all, it should be like with the length of each finger. So that's what the Ergo Docs does. I think that's what the Ergo Docs does, or at least maybe their Moonlander, their second keyboard, did this after that. So instead of like staggering horizontally like this, the columns are instead staggered
right, to
go with the length of each of your fingers, especially with the pinky. The pinky generally like gets staggered like pretty, it's like an exaggerated stagger from the other ones in many of these kinds of keyboards. But the point is, people can like, you can go into like CAD software and design your own keyboard and then like tell your friendly local PCB shop, hey, could you print me this? And they'll print it for you for like the low price of $50 or something like this.
$50?
That's not the whole cost of the keyboard, but okay, but the PCB is like a pretty actually important component and like substantial component toward the total overall cost for many of these keyboards. Of course, you can bling them out and like get them to cost like kind of a lot. Like I saw some of them with like all the bells and whistles. You can buy one for something like, and also pre-made. So like you don't have to solder anything yourself, et cetera. And you can buy one of those for like $250 or $300. So like it still can be expensive, but it can be done cheap. And coming back to my earlier point, like I could take someone else's design and take that into a CAD program and then like do my own, like put the keys essentially where I want them to go.
Yeah.
And what keys I want to go there. I guess when like designing it, that's the other thing. So when designing the keyboard, you're not deciding on what keys do what. You're deciding simply on the quantity of keys. And then later on, you can do whatever you want as far as like, oh, I don't want that to be a print screen button anymore. I want it to be like this other button.
Yeah.
So I'm like, when Lenovo did this to me by taking away my print screen button on the Gen 12 ThinkPad, it's like, I never want to be betrayed like that again. So what I'm thinking now is I'm just going to like, I could possibly, I haven't decided to actually do this yet, but it's a possibility that I could go and like make my own keyboards. And that feels very liberating. So I'm very happy about this.
That would be an interesting service to get into. It's a very Jefferson Yeoman mentality to bring to the keyboard game, which is in keeping with most of your computer electronic philosophy. So having now finished up your rhythm school training, you've done the institutional side of it, and you are now free to abuse that knowledge however you see fit. And mm-hmm. it sounded mostly like command line, but now that this is branching into hardware, this is good, because for some reason I cannot ever compel myself hard enough to get into robotics, and I'm hopeful that you will lean in that direction so that I don't have to, or at least will give me an impetus. My problem is I'm not, like, I'm sure most of the people around me see me as a weird, eccentric, pioneer-type person. I'm not a pioneer. I'm just an aggressive iterator, mm-hmm. but I need something to iterate on.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that you will ignite that, and then I can run with it, basically. So that's my secret not plan, or hope. I guess that's a hope. So with that, that's what a secret not
secret
plan
not
is.
Secret not plan is also known as a hope. Yeah. It's a strong possibility here. You know, you're making me recall a recent alumni meeting where I got to meet some of the other previous rhythm school grads, and they're like already in the trenches of trying to find a job at this point, right? So one of them, and almost all of us, are career changers. There are some of us that aren't career changers in the sense that some like went directly into the coding bootcamp, that's what rhythm school is for the listeners, from college. They're not career changers per se. I guess they could be considered to be career changers, like if they had a different major or whatever. Anyway, point is, this guy, one of his past careers was massage therapist, and he was like complaining / making fun of, we'll just say that he was making fun of this one particular job application, which asked him the program languages that he used for each of his previous jobs, including massage therapy.
Yeah.
So I put into the chat, the stack that I use for massage therapy was C++ and Arduino SDKs, right? So this is what I'm talking about here. It's like, maybe that's not too far removed from the possibilities here at the compound for my contributions. Like, I could be the massage therapist, but not using these, my hands, but rather using Arduinos and servos and all those kinds of things. However, these are not things that we learned about during rhythm school. And in fact, I'm a little bit like, So I'm curious about this kind of stuff. You mentioned the command line stuff earlier too. Rhythm school wasn't so much about like learning how to do stuff explicitly on the command line. Of course, like that was part of what we did just as a matter of like setting up the environment, but that wasn't like the primary thing. The primary thing was, here we are in VS Code writing an app, or like, here's an existing app that's been given to you, find the bugs, like implement these new features, and so on. So yeah, we did stuff on the command line, but like most of it was, you know, in the actual coding environment. The other thing that I'm like talking to your hope point from a moment ago, what do I want to say about that? So I would like to turn some of this knowledge into just like hobby projects, like this keyboard stuff that I was describing a moment ago.
Yeah.
Like, I am excited about the tools that I will use on this job, but it's not just about the tools. And this is actually a weakness of mine. Like, I recognize that I focus a little bit too much on the tools, a little bit too much on the environment. And I need, like, generally in my life, I suspect that I need less of that kind of focus and more of a focus on finding an actual job to get done.
Yeah.
And then doing that job well.
But I think, and that's at least one reason. I agree with you. I don't know why I started with but there. Rhythm school coincides with that goal in two ways. The first one, or I guess in reverse order, is that everything you did in rhythm school, at least from what I heard, sounded like jobs. You were given an objective to fulfill. Yeah. I mean, even if you were learning fundamentals, they were They seemed to be oriented toward objectives.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, like, so there are a couple of different kinds of jobs there. So the most, okay. So the last like job that we had literally could be described as an internship. I think I described this to you before, so I'll be like kind of short about it now. So there's, eight of us students, and then two lead engineers. They were like the instructors, but for the sake of this project, they were the lead engineers on the project. And the project was called Numbers API. And if you go right now to, you don't have to do this, but if you were to go right now to numbersapi.com, you get the website where you too can put in a number and then get a fact about it. So do you want a number, a fact about a number, like a mathy kind of fact? You can have that. Do you want a fact about a number that's like kind of date-like? What happened on November 5th, 1943? You too can find out that information. I'm not sure if that particular date is in the database. It's probably not. It's kind of a long time ago. But anyway, so we, the students slash the interns in this like role-playing exercise, got the job of, here's a bunch of tickets. We're going to make the second version of Numbers API. It's going to be better than the first version because of reasons. And there are a bunch of tickets slash issues that need to be done. And you, interns slash students of Rhythm School, are responsible for doing these things. So we did have a job there. And that's what we did. We did the job.
Yep. And I don't remember the other way that Rhythm School facilitates that, but I guess it was that the resources that you potentially ran into, I guess this is something I'm not totally sure about. So you worked in Flask, you worked in Express, so you interacted with code bases that exist out on the internet and ostensibly had to install them or otherwise finagle them through those sources. Which is a form of research, which not unlike this, you know, like if you told, and you did, you told me just now that you can print out a PCB for a mother or for a keyboard. I mean, in my head, it's like, that's not a shock. I'm like I said, I was surprised that the custom cost for it would only be $50. That seems like a great deal for something like that if the components are good.
I think that even gets you a pretty good one at keyboard size.
Yeah. But that's something that I know exists, but don't ever entertain using. I just, for some reason, I have a mental block on that kind of stuff. I'm not a service user. Like I don't use services.
Yeah, a PCB is kind of like a middle ground between like the use and non-use of services. So like a PCB you're getting because it like helps you do a project of your own. You wouldn't just go buy, like, if you wanted. If you wanted like a product, so going back to the Ergo Mechanical Keyboards thing, you can actually now buy something called the Voyager from this company that does make the Ergo Docs too. And it's like the Voyager looks a lot like many of these like custom kinds of keyboards that people have been making by like telling the PCB company, hey, PCB company, give me a PCB. And they can say, all right, they do it. And then you take a bunch of like key switches, solder them into place. You get like the microcontroller, solder that thing into place too. It's so like with Voyager, that's kind of handled and you get like a product that looks a lot like these custom keyboards, but it has like a nice case around it and stuff. Why am I making this point? Because the PCB is like, it's that middle ground between the two. So if you, the non-pioneer kind of person, I don't know, I can't remember exactly how you described yourself really.
I'm an iterator.
You're the iterator, yeah. So you're not the pioneer, but you could be perceived by others to be the pioneer because you do this like kind of iteration that many people don't hazard to do. So a PCB could be part of that. It's like a thing that could facilitate another project that you're doing.
Yeah. I just don't do that. The only things that I use in projects are products. I don't incorporate services. It fits that, and that's not specific to electronics. That is generally speaking, I don't solicit professional help for basically anything. It has to roll off an assembly line.
Yeah, I see.
Otherwise, I don't tend to entertain it.
I guess I wasn't seeing the distinction between a product and a service, and you're pointing out the correct distinction that
it's a little blurry there. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It blurs the line between product and service. What we're talking about here, because it's a custom product.
That's right. Because like it's up to in I guess most cases, although of course you could like go onto GitHub and fork someone else, like in other words, copy someone else's design, not make any modifications to it whatsoever. I'm talking about like a CAD file, computer aided design file, I think, which like already has the PCB in it. But the example I can give you right now is like one guy, his name is Ben Valak. He took the plans for an EMK, ergo mechanical keyboard, called the Ferris Sweep. So short version of that, he took some plans for a keyboard and he didn't like how it does this like swoop over the top. So he like took that design into his own CAD program, into like a CAD program. And he just like got rid of the top. He learned, it's like Photoshop, but for PCBs basically. And he like learned how to like chop off that top and like make his own little square versions at the top. So it could like just be flush with the keys rather than like have this excess, I don't know, PCB material kind of sticking out over the top. So point is that like it can be a product in the sense that like you just take the thing from the GitHub repository, someone else's GitHub, and then give it to the PCB manufacturer, and you didn't do anything in the meantime there. You just like took it from here to there. And in that sense, it could just be like a service rather than, excuse me, a product rather than a service.
Yeah. But this is also still just attempting to rationalize or psychologize a problem. And essentially what I'm getting at, even if I wasn't aware of it initially, is that I, at this point in my life is maybe a little too long term to think about it, but the way that I'm thinking about this is that I'm not interested in changing. I'm interested in facilitating and using what's available. And the evolution is fine. I'm more wary of the notion of self-driven change than I once was, because it seems to be a largely ineffective route to improvement. Iteration doesn't fall into this because it fits into that second category. Change and evolution are somewhat interchangeable terms, but there's sort of an overall loop difference between the two, where evolution involves instantiation of things that modify over time to accommodate, which is a form of change, but it is change over an arc as opposed to simply, you know, we've talked about this in a dozen venues of, you know, just things like this thing that you think or do is irrational and you can reason around it, but that doesn't work. Like your disposition is either to be able to overcome whatever that obstacle is or it's not. And fighting that is exhausting. I would much rather simply roll with the punch there and work with what I have. Which is a defeatist attitude from 10,000 feet. But my life's going pretty well, so I'm fine with that. Like, I don't need to radically disrupt my life at this point. It's going fine.
You're picking your battles.
Yeah.
And so you've decided on like a strategy for which battles that is picking your battles, right?
Yeah. It's the,
you've decided which ones to try and change, and you've like said, okay, here's the class of problems for which I'm going to roll with the punches. And that's good.
Yeah. I don't remember which two Greek gods it is, but there are two Greek gods to represent the two forms of change. There's the violent torrential change and the gradual change. And I am fully invested in the gradual change.
All right.
Basically. Especially because, as I mentioned, even though I haven't planned for it and kept it a secret, I mean, I could trust that you are going to investigate things like this just based on what you're interested in. You've leaned in the direction of robotics forever, whether you've had the material or skill set to do so. That's where gravity pulls you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel too bad leaving that to the side because I do trust that, you, again, gravity will do what it does.
I'm generally interested in that kind of stuff, but I haven't really acted so much on it because like of my classic excuse, which I realize is like not a very good excuse, but it's the I need to be doing the job first, right? So I need to have like my regular bases met first, and I kind of perceive myself right now as not having that, right?
Yeah.
So that's
fair.
And like, I'm speaking abstractly about that right now. I don't have a job right now. I'm looking for a job. This was the expectation, like doing the rhythm school thing. Like it was, I'm not going to have a job. Like I'm going to be in education. Like, and I literally just wrapped that up about a week ago. This was the plan all along. And now I'm anticipating something like a 6-month job search. So like I could do this kind of fun sort of stuff. It's like, ooh, I learned how to code. okay, now I know that I can learn other stuff, other aspects of coding, right? So like if I wanted to do some kind of Arduino project right now, I bet I could go do that.
Yeah.
I certainly could go do that. But it feels like an irresponsible use of my time to go like explore projects like that right now, because I feel like the more responsible thing to be doing is to like do the marketable aspects of software development. And I'm kind of perceiving Arduino-based things as not so marketable, and like this potentially misdirected use of my attention right now. So I feel like it would be irresponsible of me to focus on that.
I just finished a book by David Graeber called Bullshit Jobs. I don't know if you're familiar with
it. I read that book. I think that was the second to last book that I read before quitting my job.
Okay.
Back in 2021.
Yeah, yeah. And the Arduino thing fits fleshly into the difference between a marketable and a useful skill. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, there's a ton of stuff that's extremely valuable, especially he brings up a specific point about open source, about how open source is free because it's too useful and interesting.
So, yeah. So this... And as I was hearing myself describing that just a moment ago, it's like, oh, not so fast, Matt, because like if I were to, there's kind of a tricky balance to be struck here. And that is, so I'm thinking back to some of the advice that I've gotten like from some of the guest speakers during the final couple weeks of Rhythm School. And one of the pieces of advice that resonated with me, including the irresponsible part of me, is like, it doesn't matter so much what you do as long as you care about that thing. So it's like, yeah, you could like make another toy React app to show that you know how to use React, or go do something that you care about. Like, for example, I don't know, I might have to cut this part out, but
I was going to say, we've definitely covered you caring about a job before. This is well-trodden territory.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand why it resonated with you, but we have that for sure. That's recorded.
Okay. I'm not sure what you're referring to right now.
What? Oh, we've had you at multiple existential points on this podcast.
Maybe that's why I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
Bemoaning apathy about jobs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Like basically breaking down into tears almost, like talking about like, but I wanted some meaning out of this job. Where the fuck is the meaning now?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, maybe I would care about making another toy React app. I bet I could get myself to care, but I could really care about like doing justice in the world by mailing people glitter bombs. Right.
Right.
That's, I don't know, like how do I set up an app to like get someone to, so, okay. So let's get less breathless for a second. So Habitest, my one like expedition into the world of web site applications back in 2017, 2018, one of the things about it was like, I didn't like how people would say that they were going to do a thing and then they didn't fucking do the thing. It's like, are you fucking lying? Let's not lie about what we're trying to do. Right. So that, and then, all right. So backing up a little bit further, like Habitest was one version of that where people, it's like, you know how to make your life better. Just fucking do it.
Yep.
And that, But let's be kind of gentle about it by just testing it, right? So that's actually good. It's like, I have an idea for what I might do to make my own life better, but I'm not sure. Let me try it. Let me test it for like a week. Let me test it for 30 days. And let me not fucking lie about it, right? So I wanted to like systematize this, not lying about it.
Yeah.
Or facilitating some kind of
accountability,
and getting other people's eyes on it too. And this was kind of influenced by what I did on Facebook about a year prior to this. Like I made, what is it? Like the top picture on Facebook. I made it into a calendar. So it's not the profile picture, but there's like the top of Facebook that you can decorate the banner like back this. It's probably the same now, but it might not be. I haven't checked it in a while. But back in 2016-17, you could change the banner, and I did so every day by like taking by making it into a calendar that I would like track, hey, did I go to bed on time, to give myself that accountability. And then I made a web app based on that. Yeah. So like that was, and then if you didn't do it, then you had to take the mayonnaise challenge or something like that, which is like your consequence of not following the habit is you eat the mayonnaise.
I did a version of that. I don't know if I did it with you or in the vicinity of that time period, but I was doing it for a weight loss thing, I believe. Mm. And that was not the first time that signaled to me that I don't respond well to those kind of things, but it's the difference between personality types. Your version of conscientiousness manifests completely different than mine.
And this is one of the reasons why I like had a crisis of faith about the whole like, oh, is habit test even a good thing to work on? Because like maybe it would actually like backfire in many cases. So I was like, am I doing a bad thing by like putting this out there? Not sure. But, and also like that kind of internal argument with myself was possibly just like the lazy part of me speaking. It's like, oh, I don't want to work, so I'm just going to like come up with this argument that means that I don't have to work anymore.
Well, philosophically, you may have been lazy about it, even if you weren't trying to be. I mean, the audience for habit test doesn't have to be the totality. It just has to be a specific number of people, which, I mean, that's a very serious product focus problem that a lot of people in companies have. You're in very good company there. So
what, the necessity to like pick one kind of thing to do and do that one thing and serve that one demographic?
Yeah. Assuming that you need to appeal to everyone.
Yep. Yeah. I agree with you.
Very easy trap to fall in.
Yeah. So I guess that was like the lazy part of me saying like, yeah, Matt, you need to serve it. What you're putting out there, Matt, needs to be good for everybody, except it doesn't. And yeah, I was shaken by like, so I solicited feedback when I was working on this app. Part of it was like direct outreach on Reddit in order to like find users for it. And like also outreach to other people making web apps on a place called Indie Hackers. And one of the pieces of feedback that I got was like, how do you know this is even good? Like, is this a good thing to do? And I was like, fuck, you're right. But I didn't realize at the time, I guess, that I wasn't trying to serve everybody. And probably it could be a good like solution for some people. Anyway, why did I get onto habit test? I guess the reason for that
was something you cared about.
Yeah, yeah. And we're talking about it in the context of like, well, now it's not 2017 or 18 anymore. It's 2024. And I'm trying to find out like what to do next year. So in order to do that in this like job search that I hope won't take longer than 6 months. And like right now, if you stretch the y-axis on the open positions in tech right now appropriately, it's hockey sticking upward right now. So like that's good.
All right.
But anyway, like, in order to make that job search go well, I need to interview well, right? And well, stepping even back from that, I need to get interviews first. And one part of getting interviews is like having projects. Like I need to have a portfolio so that I can show people, as I'm probably not applying so much to jobs, although that might be part of it, but more probably a focus on networking with people. Like actually talking to people and saying like, hey, here's the thing that I've been working on lately. Here's why I care about it. And like, actually it feels like, no, doesn't feel like, I have been told that an important component of that process is actually caring about the things that you're working on. That's why I got onto the whole habit test thing.
Sure.
And I, at this point, need something to care about once again. And I haven't, new paragraph. Okay. So
ding.
I've been out of rhythm school for 1 week. And during that first week, it was like me getting into a new kind of routine. Like finding a job is now my job, right? And I have like full autonomy for doing that now. And that's like, that's cool. I like the full autonomy. And I realized like probably in like 6 or 12 months, I'm going to have a job and I'll look back on this time and be like, damn, like, look at how much autonomy I had back then. That was cool. I love having autonomy. And I'm probably going to be, and I kind of welcome the need to eat shit for about 2 years or 3 years, because like going into this new field, eat shit in my new job, that is, right?
Yeah.
And I welcome that because like, I know that I'm not shit yet in this field. Right. So I need to, it's going to be necessary for me. Let me step back for a second. There are some kinds of shit that I won't eat here, but like, I recognize that as I am the low man on the totem pole, I'll need to say yes to a lot of stuff. So right now, I'm gonna look back on right now with nostalgia, thinking like, oh, I had this autonomy. But I'll also look back with like, oh shit, you did a difficult thing back there. Like trying, like going through the process of getting rejected over and over again from like job applications and attempts to network with a person, like have a conversation with somebody. And, oh, you got far through an interview, but like someone else got the job instead. Sorry. That's going to be rough too. But I look forward eventually to like figuring out a way to look back on this time with nostalgia.
I think you will definitely do that because right now conforms to the time when you tend to be the most satisfied, which is when you are in the transformative state between or in the process of starting something.
Yep, yep.
So, I mean, it makes it gives you it's interesting. You have a teleo, you have a teleos is not a word. You have a telos out of the gate, which is to get to the surface where, you know, general prosperity and competence and potentially respect are to be gained, at which point you'll be dissatisfied. Because that's why video games are structured that way. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to, you know, the worst part about Stardew Valley is completing the community center, because then you have a prosperous town and everybody's happy, and that sucks. Like, there's nothing exciting to do at that point. So you just blow it all up and start back over.
That's why life exists too, because, well, never mind. We don't have to go down that route.
I mean, it's up to you, no. But I mean, I would definitely, that is my prediction for the next year and a half, is that this will be your favorite part, even where it sucks. Because it is dynamic and weird and you don't know everything that's going on. And then as soon as you land a stable job, you will hate it.
Oh, no. Well, my potential guard against that is that I hope to land a stable job at a place that I care about the mission.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and I still don't know whether what you said... Hang on. All right, so... What you said might still be right, even if I find a place whose mission I care about.
Yeah, that's what However, I'm basically afraid of.
Yeah, I'm a little bit afraid of that too. But like, the way I saw this is that I had little choice in the matter. Like,
oh, I'm not faulting what you did. I think it makes perfect sense
because the hell that I was in before was worse than the potential hell that I could end up in next.
Yeah, no, there was nothing irrational about what you did. I think it makes all the sense in the world. But it makes sense whether you look through it through your lens or mine. Is all I'm saying. Neither is negated by what you did.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
And even if it's had like weird patches in it, it's basically made sense. Because I mean, it would be weirdly reverse arrogant of me to say that you're also doing fine, but you're also doing fine from what I can see. So
I'm sure. I think that if we were to boil down my situation to a sentence like that, I am doing fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Grand scheme, et cetera.
Yeah, et cetera. Yes.
So. That's my prediction for 2025.
Great.
The other reason why we went on a useful tangent there, but I was going to say the other reason you probably haven't gotten into robotics, and it's a lot of the reason I haven't gotten into robotics, it's really expensive.
Because
physical material objects just cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Like even small scale stuff ends up costing hundreds of dollars. So it gets complicated fast. I mean, they make a billion Roombas and they still cost $200. So it's just one of those things you have to get over, but we'll see.
Yeah. The middle ground there could be an ergo-mechanical keyboard.
Yeah.
Go to a PCB manufacturer and get myself two keyboards that'll last for the next 15 years.
Yeah.
So that no one can fuck me over with my print screen button ever again.
Exactly.
And then in 15 years after that, dude, it's 10 more keyboards. It's set for life.
Yep. Yeah.
Or we won't need keyboards anymore at that point, but we'll see.
Yeah. I'm just thinking through my my iterations through, you asked me about the keyboard that I've got over there. Yeah. And that is in keeping with my maximalist consumer behavior. I mean, I have iterated through many keyboards, but I've bought every single one of them. I just buy them from different people. The two daily drivers I have, that's not true. I have three daily drivers. My three daily drivers are the MacBook keyboard, which is fine. And actually, the more I use a mechanical keyboard, the more I appreciate the Chiclet keyboard for the absolute lack of effort involved in typing on it. Mm-hmm. I also, and this is just the embarrassing reality of it that I have to get over, I type way faster on the MacBook keyboard than any mechanical keyboard. It's like a 20 word per minute difference between, it's wow. not as pleasant, yeah. but it's so much faster, mm-hmm. Just because of the way my hands are laid on the thing. But what are the nets? I've got a Keychron, I think K11. I have whatever the most expensive one they would sell me is. It's made out of a sheet of milled aluminum. It weighs like 6 pounds. It's awesome.
Non-portable. It is staying right here.
What's great is I move it around all the time. Okay. I have like the worst use case for it because somehow Keychron has developed a wired keyboard with a bad response time.
Oh, weird.
Okay. Yeah, people say it's not good for gaming, despite it being, it's USB. It's a standard that, as far as I know, is electromechanically determined, and it's still, like, pokey, apparently. Like, I don't notice, I don't play shooters anymore, basically, but, like, it's, I love the keyboard to death. It's one of the split ones, to speak to that ergo side of it. This is the closest I would get. Like, I've tried, the closest I will get is I will prop up a keyboard or, like, angle it or something. But that there's very little you can do. And I am genuinely surprised how limited the ergonomic keyboard market is, given how many people theoretically buy keyboards. Mm-hmm. There are, under $200, there's, like, five of them.
Yeah, and I think that it's probably the case that a big reason for that is people are like, oh, a different keyboard? I don't know. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something about that. I mean, there are certain markets that feel like they should be bigger, and that one is one. Like, but it is because people just simply aren't, you know, and this is, again, their perception that I'm a pioneer. I am adventurous mm-hmm. in the sense that I will venture. Like, I will move
take around. At least one step. I'll take just one more step than so many people.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't like to idly speculate about stuff. I would rather just try it.
Yeah.
Again, that doesn't. I don't think that makes me a trade. At least not when comparing to what you do. It is not. It is a tier below that. But it is significant, and it is apparently a step that most people simply don't take. They just accept the keyboard that they have, and they. You know, I know you were when you were. You were talking to Anna while you were assembling. You conscripted her for assembling some keyboard. Keyboard
putting
keys,
the caps on. It, yeah.
And you were complaining about the legacy, the skeuomorphic legacy of keyboard design.
That's typewriters.
Yeah, where yeah, typewriters staggering the stems forced keys to be staggered, and mm-hmm. they still are in a totally unergonomic way.
And this is a thing that people that won't change anymore. It's because it's become the lowest common denominator thing. And it's like, ooh, this is a different keyboard? That looks scary. I don't think I'm going to try that.
What's
that? And like, there's probably a better solution in the solution space of keyboards, but we've all just settled as a society on this one thing, and we're stuck there. And this is, we're going to look back in 500 fucking years and be like, the fuck are we doing with all of this stuff? There are so many better solutions to so many things in life, including keyboards, but we're stuck in this fucking stupid space because of something that needed to precede it. Like, the typewriter was a necessary step to get to the keyboard. And that's fine, but like,
no,
I wish we could change it. And some of us can. And some of us are going to, right? So we can go into the... I haven't yet done it. I'm already prematurely counting myself among the people who have done this.
Yeah.
I haven't yet. So
congratulations.
I shouldn't be claiming that. Yeah, it's a congratulations that
you've
I can't accept it yet.
Okay.
Although I thank you. But yeah, like, we'll get stuck... Many people and society as a whole will get stuck with the QWERTY layout. We haven't even talked about layouts yet.
Yeah.
But like the stagger thing, just the stagger thing.
Specifically, the stagger is funny to me because the keyboard is a slap in the face here, because there are a lot of instances where there are regimentation issues that and genuine like legacy systemic problems that force you to maintain old standards. And keyboards, we know, is not one of them because phone keyboards were invented 10 years ago.
You're talking about the iPhone keyboard?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was literally invented 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. It could be any shape or form factor they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And it's the same.
It's the same. Yep.
There was nothing. They could, if Apple had chosen a different layout for that keyboard, and they did kind of. There are keys when you go into the, when you hit the shift and you go to the punctuation marks, they are laid out differently than they are on a real keyboard. But the actual.
In a grid.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They, and
the second layer with the symbols.
Yeah, the second layer of symbols are not, they don't align precisely. But the normal keys, if Apple at that moment had decided that Dvorak or whatever else, they would never have picked Dvorak. That's not theirs.
Maybe just like A, B, C, D, et cetera.
Or that would have been it. That would have become the standard.
Perhaps. And the reason I say perhaps there is because perhaps the iPhone then would have failed if they picked that, right? So they needed like that skeuomorphism to like give themselves that 0.1% greater probability of the iPhone's initial success.
I agree. There is an off chance that it would have sunk the whole ship. I doubt it.
I agree. Yeah. It probably wouldn't have, but like
because you don't interact with it the same way.
The keyboard?
Yeah, you don't interact with the keyboard the same way. Your hands aren't in the same position. Mm-hmm. It's literally a different motion.
Yeah, yeah. So, and yet I still do think that putting the QWERTY keyboard in the same kind of pattern would have been like a benefit, an increase in the probability that the iPhone would be adopted. Yeah. So they couldn't change it. It couldn't have been any other way. It could have been another way, but I think that was the pressure in the direction of keeping the QWERTY and the stagger on the iPhone keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah, the keyboard just seems like an interesting case. Because one of the things I finally got my copy of Shift Happens in, and I haven't read as much of it as I should have, but
I'm not familiar with that.
Shift Happen is by a guy named, I think his name is Marcin Wickery. He's a Polish historian, put out a Kickstarter for a very nice 2-volume hardcover compendium about typewriters, keyboards generally, I think, by the time it's done. But definitely the first book is entirely about typewriters. It's got a lot of very nice pictures of old-ass typewriters, and it goes through the history of it, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very expensive box set and absolutely worth it. I was made fun of on accident for having purchased it. Mitchell had pointed out that there was a Kickstarter for this manual, and he's like,
"Uh-oh."
And he's like, he's like, "Can you believe that people are paying $150 for this?" Like, But no, one of the things that they bring up is a one of the original head-to-head competitions between two of the organizations. I don't remember their names, but it was the
like
one
the keyboard
that,
standardization.
Yeah, the keyboard, the hardware layout, and there were a lot of ways things could have gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a long time there was an assumption that the shift key. That was up in the air. Like the idea of having a key mean more than one thing.
Yeah.
Was like it was scorned in marketing because you had these other keyboards that had their own unique all cap keys to
all right, so you have just like a second
circling the lower cap.
So I complain sometimes about the world that we've ended up in, but I haven't considered the worse parts of that possibility space where your MacBook in front of you could just be like huge tiny keys.
You would love this part of this book.
Oh man!
But one of the things that they mention in that book, which I'm going to forget why I even brought it up, but it's a fun factoid, so it's fine, is they did a competition. It was like the first recorded or close to the first official typewriting contest.
Okay.
And it was a brand versus a brand, basically. The guys were important at the time, but it was mostly a marketing opportunity for these two companies.
The battle of the brands.
Yeah. And the winner was coming in over 100 words per minute on a typewriter that was produced before 1900.
Having reviewed the literature, I can report more accurately that Frank McGurran won the first recorded typewriting competition on a Scholes and Glidden Remington No. 2 in 1888, besting his rival Louis Traub in both dictation and copying trials at 95 words per minute, which I think we can all agree, while not over 100, remains an insane accomplishment.
Okay. Did he have, was he doping?
That seems mechanically impossible.
Yeah, yeah. This guy must have really beefy fingers.
So, like, but even if that number is off by, like, a bunch, like, let's say it was 80, what that tells me is that in a time where they were where they needed these contests because they were trying to advertise the existence of these typewriters, they were expensive, they were industrial machines, they had to pitch the idea of this, and the way that you do that is, like, look, this is way faster than writing. Like, they're... Very few people were using them at the time. And even so, the record setters were doing 100 words a minute. What that tells me is that if someone were to, like, put a banner forward for a superior keyboard, a fundamentally superior keyboard, I think it wouldn't be hard for them to win out with enough marketing. Like, I think if they
You're talking about nowadays?
Nowadays, okay. I think that would be possible with the right amount of dedication. The thing is, the alternative would need to be significantly better, and that's the double-edged sword of that story, is that this is the QWERTY layout. It looked, the typewriter that the one guy was on looked a hell of a lot like the one we use today, and he was already doing 100 words per minute. And this, you know, like they do the tests with Dvorak, and it's like you really only do get marginal gains from it.
That's the point I was about to make. Yeah. I think that the low hanging fruit in terms of marginal gains have already been had. I think that we're at the end game for keyboard keyboard layouts now. Yeah. I don't think QWERTY is going to change. Maybe we'll change from the staggered to grid sometime, or maybe the grid will become more mainstream. I don't think QWERTY is going anywhere.
Yeah.
And QWERTY
is, I mean, clearly it is demonstrably, it's not that slow. Like there are better versions, but they're not that much better. And I don't think it's weird. I heard stories, constantly about carpal tunnel syndrome in the 90s and 2000s. I don't know anybody who gets it now, and I don't know why that is. I don't know what happened to it. I don't know if keyboards were being made differently or something.
Maybe it was a switch from CRT monitors to LCDs.
It was God's
and the pain goes through your eyes down into the wrists. That must be it.
Yeah. I mean, I have no math or stats to back that up, but I feel like people got it and don't now, and I don't know why that is. Maybe it's one of those things everybody has. It's like everyone's obese now, and we just don't talk about it.
Everyone has pain in their wrist, but it's just like imperceptible pain. Yeah. My wrists feel fine.
It's masked by all the other pains. It's one of those depressing realities. Is you know, it feels in my universe like people are being health nuts all the time now. There's all this literature about all this, the diets and the exercise, and we've learned so much over the last 5 years. And then you pull up a chart. No, obesity is continuing to increase at basically the same rate it has since 2007. So it's just going up. We passed 40% recently.
Holy shit. Congratulations to us. Yeah. Wow.
That train is still hauling. It is not budged.
All right. I'm pleased to report that although I did gain a couple pounds during rhythm school, it was like 3 or 4 pounds, but I was also in the gym a whole lot more than I was when I was back
say,
in Japan.
You had to have been offsetting that.
Yeah. And yeah, so I'm not obese. Congratulations to me.
Yeah. Neither am I. I'm at about 215 right now, which is lower than I've been. It is not as low as I would like to be, but steady. I was actually have my example of the way my version of habit test. You like accountability and writing things down and stuff, and I like that for specific things, but not for habits. Mm-hmm. Which is why the sheet I have in front of me that has all my objectives for the week, there is exactly one line that is printed because every other thing is dynamic. And the one line, which would, I assume, be... I'll just read the line out. Objective number one, work out, sleep well, eat right, drink less, reach out, read, write, walk. Which I assume most people would think is maybe a little vague and consolidated since it contains... pretty much every admonition, every either self-starter or health podcast, that's like the whole premise of the entire sphere of stuff.
Yeah.
But I find that that's exactly the amount of mental space that I needed to take up.
Yeah, perfect. And especially if you like make it visible to yourself too. But like I'm imagining you in a decision making moment during the day. It's like, okay, what do I do now? And you just see the word walk there. It's like, I'll go walk now.
That's, and what that does, what it does by not merely being like vague in any particular term, like none of those terms are defined. Every one of those terms can be interpreted in any specific arithmetic way that you want.
Yeah, like and the word less there.
Yeah. And they're brought together. Yeah. It's not don't drink. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I won't, yeah. Or I won't not. But because of the ambiguity, that actually works really well, because the part of me that fails every habitual every virtuous cycle is the mathematical side of my brain. Mm-hmm. Is the rational side. The rational side fucks up everything. It is because the second it's the only place I can get away with this is timers. I love using timers. But even looking at clocks screws with this. Only for some reason, and I don't have a solid theory on why this is, but introducing numbers makes me a weasel.
So are you contrasting a number-based clock with like a progress bar-based clock?
Literally a timer on my watch.
Okay. I see. Okay.
Yeah, 3, 6, 12, or 24 minutes. Just the time counting down. For some reason, that defeats this.
Yeah.
Every other form of numbers makes me, including the hardcore 1-0 binary, that also falls prey to this.
Hmm.
The thing I need is, again, drink less or sleep well.
Yeah.
I don't specify a number of hours. That's not a time to get up. That's not a time to go to bed. That's not, you know, just holistically, because I know what that means. I know what sleeping well means. I am one of these people. I've listened to hours and hours of people discuss the medical research on all, I know what that means. It's whether I choose to do it or not that matters.
So one aspect of sleeping well that I'm familiar with is don't drink within 2 or 3 hours of bedtime.
Yeah.
Is that one of the things that you mean by sleep well?
It's one of the things that I'm aware of as being part of, it's something that improves sleep.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
it would fit within the purview of sleeping well. But I've also drank before going to bed, and I've slept fine before. Mm-hmm. So there is, and that's really what it ultimately is that I'm really bad at regimenting my time, space, etc. And I resent where it doesn't fit in a way that makes me want to destroy schemas that are built to regiment.
Yep.
So much so that in this new version of, which I'm gonna probably do a podcast on this new system because I do like this one a lot. My objectives on a daily basis are not time specific. They are just three things. And when they get done is not material. The idea is to just get the three things written down, done. And then I have blocks of the day. I have morning, afternoon, and evening, but that is exclusively for journaling. That is exclusively for recording what happened. And surprise, surprise, I do way less on that sheet than I do on the objective sheet. Because again, it has this arithmetic constraint. Whereas the 1, 2, 3, they're not even in a priority order, because that would fuck this up too.
Yeah.
It's literally, there's just three things, and which one I get done or what that doesn't, they need to be done. That's the important part. It's not a matter of getting this specific, because I've already done the prioritization by writing three things down. So yeah, the simplification here, this scheme is more complicated than my old four block scheme technically, but philosophically it's a lot flatter and I like that.
How do you arrive at the three things for your day? Do you have like another piece of paper on which you write down possibilities for the day and then you select three? What do you do?
No. I have at the top of the sheet, there are the objectives for the week. I have 9 slots. That's just a number I chose because it fit on the page. That's why there's 9.
That's fine.
Number one.
This is the objective sheet that you're referring to?
Yeah, this is the weekly objective sheet. So I'm trying to get, I try to get 9 things done during the week. Larger things that take more than 24 minutes, probably, because that's generally how I subdivide my time, because it's the largest timer I use. Like this week I have, what do we have? I got 2 work-related ones, and then I've got Erect Tower 1, which is the thing we moved over there. We did not succeed at doing that, but we have at least moved it where it needs to go. Have blueprints for the bathroom. I'm going to write those up after we're done here. We're recording another Mac log as we speak. Reroute the Ethernet. That was done. Did that while you were gone. That was the thing that improved MVB's internet by 0%.
Okay.
And then it was to move the Wi-Fi router here so it's better. The reception's better outside.
Nice.
Read Debt, the First 5,000 Years, another David Graeber book.
I haven't read that one, but I was like, that sounds familiar.
So Bullshit Jobs was actually disappointing because I had just read Debt, the First 5,000 Years. Mm. That book is clearly a well-researched treatise on a subject. Bullshit Jobs is sort of like a documentary as a book. Like, it's a testimonial aggregation, like which is useful. I don't regret reading it, but Debt's an excellent book.
Okay.
I like it a lot. And then finish Hangar Migration, which that's open-ended and vague, but I gave myself a check mark for that because that's pretty much done.
And you do that larger list at the beginning of the week, and then on each day you peel 3 things for that
yeah,
day.
Yeah, basically I give myself 3 discrete motions toward completing those objectives.
Okay.
I don't write all 9 objectives down on Monday. But I generally have 5 of them I have so far. And I like having it be a little open-ended just because, again, being that regimented about it would break it.
Yeah.
So
speaking of regimentation, do you just burn this at the end of the week or do you file it away somewhere?
No, they stack easy.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. This is another interesting thing where I took the reverse of a creative restraint. I have always, my schemas going back for a long time have had the creative restraint that they have to fit in one of these dot grid journal books that's like 9 by 6 inches. I love these books to death, these little leather bound books. They're like $6 and the dot grid in them is great. The paper's good. It's satisfying to use these books. But an actual normal size sheet of paper has a lot more space on it. And it turns out, for my purposes, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that there's a lot of false promise in those books that I don't actually abide by. One is that it's portable in a way that these sheets are not. I don't take the book anywhere anyway, so that's a total non-issue. There's the freedom. I may have constrained myself too much using the books because the ability to print out, this isn't something I'm writing, 1, 2, 3. I have an Excel sheet that has the rubric for this that I just print out.
Yeah, nice.
And
you have like a stack of them ready to go, or you like?
No, I print them out because I iterate on them all the time.
I see.
Yeah, this is version like 5 of this. So, but I've liked it quite a bit. It's very low. There is one supplement to this, and it is a digital concession, which is another thing that I try that the creative constraint of the book failed me in, is that scheduling tasks on a time basis, I don't like doing it on paper. largely because they move around too much and I don't like crossing things off. So in addition to the two sheets of paper, I put the laptop behind them with the calendar open, and time specific things go in the calendar on the laptop, which has two benefits. One, as I already mentioned, you don't have to scratch things off. You move them around however you want. The other one is that my watch tells me when they're happening.
That's convenient.
Which is very convenient.
Yeah. I consider the smartwatch from time to time. And this is another selling point for the smartwatch.
Yeah.
It seems pretty cool.
I prefer the watch to the phone for anything I can get away with it. Mm-hmm. If Apple, they
that's one of the big selling points for me too. Yep. Cause I like as a, I deliberately try and get away from the phone, but sometimes that's to my detriment because sometimes I do miss some of the signal that comes through when I'm trying to filter out a bunch of the noise. And watches seem to be good as that signal filter.
Watches are interesting because they have a threshold of notification that is so low that I actually find it to be less distracting than the phone. So I get messages, it taps me. The other thing, of course, is that the tap, I feel the tap in a way I don't feel vibration from the phone.
Damn.
Yeah. Reliable.
Yeah.
You get enough of the message to know what it is, and if you need to go deal with it, you do, and if you don't, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the phone, it is just as easy to reply no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentally different response. And even though it distracts me more times during the day, the distraction is way smaller. Okay. And I find that to be a worthwhile trade-off.
Is part of the reason the distraction is smaller is because, like, so here's the thing that I experience with the phone notification. It's like, I have the phone, I've got the notification. Now I'm done processing the notification. Here's my phone. It's in my hand. What do I do next? Do I put the phone down?
You have to put it down.
Not right. I do.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Yeah.
No, this
is. So I'm imagining that the watch kind of solves this problem. Is that true?
It does. No, okay. That's the whole thing, is that the engagement is so slight combined with the fact that you can respond on the watch, but it sucks. Like it's not a pleasant experience other than very specific tasks. Like binary yes, no responses are fine because those are basic. But for every other kind of thing, judging whether or not to respond to something immediately or to go to the place where it makes sense to do it more intelligently happens instantaneously, and you're not tempted to.
Yeah.
Because it's the wrong place to do it. So I really, that combined with the fact that this is the best, I'm sure the Samsung equivalent, the Google equivalent of this would be just as good for any of these purposes. It's the fastest timer I can possibly imagine. Like it is so fast to set any one. Like I can see the four primary timers that I use when I hit the watch. It is literally two taps to get any of the four timers I need. And that, I mean, you know, we're talking about saving like 3 seconds. They're three very critical seconds.
That's important.
I did not expect to like the watch as much as I do. This is an example of me venturing into something that I, you know, and I'm very, very happy with it. Other than the fact that they keep changing what the buttons do.
You can make your own custom mechanical buttons for the watch.
So it seems, based on your adventure into smartwatches, that's not as easy to do as it seems.
That's correct.
which is a shame.
People have modified the Casio F91W, but that's pretty...
Well, and you had a, what was it, a watchy? What was the name of the watch you had?
I had a watchy, yeah. I didn't like how it looked, and I also looked under the hood for like the Arduino stuff, and it was not as easy to get into as I thought it was going to be. And I'm like, oh, something else. I think I got the watchy like pretty shortly before I started planning my flight to Japan as well. So I'm like, I'm not going to get into this. So right now the watchy is sitting in a drawer somewhere, unfortunately.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I was alluding to, the thing that I wish that Apple would do, which feels like it would be contrary to what I was just discussing a little bit, but if, as long as it didn't have to do video, if this watch was twice as long, and most critically, this is an ergonomic issue that I'm surprised no one complains about, or I've literally never seen an alternative, the watch face should come over the blade of your forearm that you don't have to do the full wrist twist, because my shoulder hurts from doing this. It's not like a serious arthritic pain, but it's an uncomfortable thing to do. And the screen, we have curving OLED screens, it would not be hard to just make it curve.
I know some people wear watches like on the inside of their wrist too.
That defeats the health metric stuff. So yeah, it's not as use. I've done it before and I decided against it, because the other thing is the watch face turns on and off when you do the motion, and it doesn't understand that on the bottom, which that's the kind of thing I would expect Android to be better about. Potentially they may have like software or firmware that understands that you're doing that. But the other thing is that putting the face down is also,
that also sucks in its own way.
No, it's the blade of your arm is where it should be. It should just, the screen should just curve down and be a little bit, and if it was a little bit larger, with the extra battery life that you get out of that, and this is what Apple would never do, you could replace the phone.
Yeah, be careful with that, man. Even saying so.
No, they could absolutely. I mean, the ultra version of this watch already has, it doesn't just have GPS. I think this version of this, I think you can get GPS and LTE out of, they're pretty close to making it a phone anyway.
Yeah, the last thing that you don't have in that is a camera. You just like buy a supplementary camera.
No, the phone is a camera. That's all. Every iteration of this phone for the last seven generations has been making it a better camera. Basically all they do to it anymore. They've totally botched the back of every phone to make the cameras better. Like the case on my current phone I'm holding up has three giant warts on the back of it that they have to build like a thing with it. It sucks.
Yeah.
I don't like taking it out of my pocket, which I don't have to because I have a watch. They solved it by making me buy something else. But
well done.
I do like the thing, so it's fine. You know, at some point, consumerism does wrap around and it is good again. And the watch, I believe, is one of those examples.
Yeah, and one of the reasons you started talking about the watch is because it helps you with this productivity system.
Yep.
And that's good.
Just a little bit. Actually, not just a little bit. I'm slightly embarrassed by how much better I do when I'm timing things. I'm way, way more focused.
Maybe you said just a little bit because it like seems like a small action, but like those you mentioned like the three critical seconds, and like the three critical seconds to set one of the timers, and the fact that it's just 3 seconds is important.
Oh no, it's not. It's not that it's 3 seconds. It takes three less seconds. It takes about 1.5 seconds to do.
Yes,
and that is important because it's the arithmetic peril. If it took me any longer, I'd think about it, but it is so fast that I don't. And it breaches that. The thing I have to do is remember, which I frequently don't. But the second I do, my day improves in a way that's, again, it's like embarrassingly effective.
What do you mean by remember? Like
remember that, to set a timer.
Setting a timer.
Literally
is like a
just
thing
to
that
do
you'd
it.
Like
just
to
remember to do it. And that I don't know what I would do, because there's no panacea on that.
There is.
I'm really good at ignoring things.
You could, okay, well. If you were me,
I was going to say this has to be where this hypothetical is going.
If you were me, then you could do something like, every morning I'm going to be in the habit of saying, I set timers.
Yeah.
You just say that I set timers, and you're like fucking, you're walking around. It's like, I set timers. Oh, should I set a timer right now?
Yep.
I'm going to set a timer now. Yep. But you probably won't do that because you're not me.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't behave that way. But no,
which is fine.
Yeah, no, it's whatever. It's fine. You're you already. We don't need two of you or two of me for that matter. So, yeah. So that's how I've been being productive.
Well done, and congratulations.
Yep. You're in a brand new phase of life, so you don't have to respond with your own schemas unless you've already managed to bake one. Which
I don't know what my schema is going to be yet.
Yeah.
I mean, the last week was like the transitional week from like being in that regimented school like thing to autonomy once again.
Yeah.
So last week was largely about like just figuring out how to handle my day. So I did so with the calendar. So What was I doing? I was dividing my time, my work time, essentially into three buckets: learning and development, networking, and applications, like job applications.
Yeah.
And I was just doing those for that time. So like the first 2 days last week, I cleaned up Jobly, the React-based job board where you too can find all of the jobs. So now Jobly is in my... It's in a state where it could be in my portfolio. In fact, I think it is currently live on m4t7.net. Yeah, it is. I did put it there. And the thing I haven't done yet, by the way, if you squint, that looks like matt.net. the thing I haven't done yet is put it on my resume. And in fact, like, it's okay that it's not on my resume because like I have two technical projects on there right now. And those like kind of fill it out, but it would be nice to have like, okay, so let me get your thoughts on this. I want to have like a resume ready to send out. It's like the general resume.
Yep.
Where I'm like, I put all of like the jobs that I've had and the projects that I've done and each of like the education things that I've done, like all the sections of the resume. Those are like, the like, think of, we can analogize this to like a soccer team, right? Where like the jobs are like the forward position and the education is like the defense position or something like that. And then you have like your roster of potential things that could go into each of those positions, right? So right now I have three technical projects: Jobly, Warbler, and Saltly, the photo editor that's salt themed. And only two of those are currently on the resume because I said to you just a moment ago that Jobly doesn't have like a way to be on the resume. I haven't written the bullet points about it yet. However, there's no room for it right now. But I think it'd be nice, like, if I were applying to a place that that puts more emphasis on React skills, that I could like easily swap out Warbler, which focuses on like other technologies, for Jobly. And I don't really have a slick way of doing that right now.
Can't create a view on the page.
What's that?
What? I don't know. It's a word I heard in the model view controller situation.
I see.
You'd have a different web page you point them to. You'd have a sub page you point them to instead of the root.
I'm thinking right now of like the PDF version of the resume that like I just send out along with any kind of job application. So I was kind of wondering if there was like a slick way to do that. Right now I've put together the resume with Google Docs. I might not continue to do it that way. I might use Writer or something like
this.
Yeah,
I don't know if Google Docs has any smarts in it, but I assume it must have that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's probably buried in there where you can like just like make visible some stuff and make invisible some stuff and then like export it to PDF, and then it only has like the things that you like put onto the field, so yeah, to speak.
I mean, you can definitely do that in Microsoft Word. There's stuff for that, but that's, yeah, specifically for mailing. You could strip out the mailing stuff though. I have to imagine Google tries to maintain feature parity with Word, so yeah, one would assume.
Yeah, I should look harder into that. But yeah, right now I don't have a slick way of customizing the resume. So it's stuff like this. So we were talking about like, okay, Matt, like what is your possible schema if you have one? And it's like, I don't really have one, but I'm doing stuff like this and I'm fitting them into like buckets of my day right now.
Yeah.
Am I getting that right? Maybe. I would definitely like to spend more time building stuff and doing justice to the world by sending them glitter bombs by way of some kind of app.
That's
might
right.
have to cut that part.
And break.
Dude, this is actually why I got onto Habit Test earlier. It's because I was like, I have this idea. Do you talk about an idea before you do it? I don't know if that's appropriate. You might have to cut this whole 30-minute segment.
Okay, right? Good.
So it's kind of like Habit Test in the sense that like you said you would do something, and then did you do it? You ticked the box. If you don't tick the box, then your name is entered into a bucket somewhere. And if your name is then withdrawn from the bucket a number of years later, you get a fucking glitter bomb. You don't know when exactly. You know it's going to be in 5 years, but I have your information that you shared with me in your data, in my database. Yeah. And I have glitter bombs.
Yep.
And you're going to get fucking bombed. You might.
Or whoever moves into your apartment after you leave.
No, I'm going to find a way to follow you.
Okay.
Okay.
And this will be called Habitus because it's the second one.
That's a perfect name.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Finally.
Yeah.
The branding has been, the battle of the brands has been won by both of us because good. We have the brand.
Love it.
Say it again.
What, Habitus?
Habitus?
Yeah. Yeah. You replace the E with a two.
That domain name is probably available.
I'll bet it is. I'll bet it is.
Dude, speaking of domain names, I'm happy to report my new email address. You definitely have to cut this.
All right.
m@.org. Can you believe it?
That's pretty good.
That looks like the word.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
m@.org. .com was available too for $9,000.
That's a lot.
.org was available and purchased by me for the low, low first year price of $6.60.
That's pretty cheap.
I agree. Every renewal year, property taxes on it are like $10 per year. But dude, .org, I'm so fucking pleased. Please don't cut this part. Please email me, everybody. m@.org. Welcome.
Yeah. Having not interviewed in any meaningful sense for a job in 10 years, my only recommendation based on what I've heard about how job searches go and how computers sieve all the information is that the last part of your resume programmatically, whether you do this portfolio tailoring, definitely make sure to copy paste the job description at the bottom of your resume so the SEO picks that up.
Oh, hell yeah. This is like put it in white font at the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm definitely going to have to test that out alongside the AI-generated resume touching up that I have done and do not recommend because it's awful.
We don't have time to get into it. Oh, we have all the time in the world. But the God, AI. Fuck, man. What happened? What?
The promise.
What happened?
The promise has been rescinded.
What is going on?
I'm no longer worried.
What is going on?
Well, what do you have in mind?
I asked yeah. ChatGPT 4, the expensive one, to tell me where Karl Marx's son was buried.
Oh, yeah.
And it shot me back an answer that was somewhat condescending and so wrong I could not believe it. So it was like, well, Marx didn't have all of his sons died really young, but we can speculate. And it's like, and then here's three, and you'll notice that every program now they create a bullet point list of between 2 and 10 bullets, no matter what you add. Like they give you the same template for every And it gave me three places where Marx's either daughters or distant relations were buried. No, all I needed was for them to say, we don't know. Just tell me you don't know. You don't know because the kid was either, they died in childbirth or they died in a year and it's not significant. That's the answer to the question. It came up with three just categorically bad answers to the question instead of the simple answer of we don't know. We don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
That's a valid thing to give me back. Just incredible how bad this shit is now.
And then whenever that happens to me, I say, please, next time, tell me that you don't know. And it says, I'll try harder next time. And then it fucking doesn't.
Yeah.
It lies to me about that too. Time. Motherfucking GPT. Jesus Christ.
And it's the not- photo stuff is great. I'm fine with that. But the language stuff is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really.
I'm not really using it for photo stuff. Have you?
There's not. What do I need a photo of? Like, it's just the use cases are so limited.
Yeah.
And someone mentioned it, finally said it out loud. It's like the only thing that Stable Diffusion and Midjourney are good for are scams. There's like no other practical use case for this software.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I thought the scams are going to be worse by now. I thought that...
No, the AI is so bad, they're not good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like freaked out over this. What? So ChatGPT came out in like October or November of 2022. And I was like getting to be freaked out about the whole generative AI thing like a couple months before that. And then I really like started going to a dark place like maybe 3 months after ChatGPT.
And to be fair, even though I was more lukewarm about it than you were, I was still pessimistic about where it was going.
Yeah,
it still seemed like it was bad.
Yeah, at that time I was more worried about the paperclippy like stuff. And you were more worried about like just the malicious use kind of thing.
Yeah, I was worried about the crime.
Yeah, and I'm less worried about the paperclippy kind of stuff at this point and the gray goo kind of stuff at this point now. But like, yeah, I still do have my eye on like the crime and like the malicious use stuff. But I thought that by this time that would have ramped up, and it hasn't yet. So like, I was wrong.
Yeah.
At least I was wrong on the time, and that I was wrong. So like that's cool.
And you were in great company being wrong about that. So this is no skin off your back for thinking that.
Mm.
So
this is one of the reasons why I went to rhythm school, by the way, to get my mind off of all of that.
Yeah.
And
while you were there, it lobotomized itself.
Perfect.
So
yeah,
we solved the problem.
Yeah. And one other reason that I decided to do the coding bootcamp thing was it's like, all right, like there's a world in the future in which software development like has, if not a renaissance, like it's gonna become like it's gonna be like it's gonna need more people.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty hopeful that we are living in that world.
Yeah. No, it's gonna there's gonna have to be a recession before there is a whatever the opposite of that is. It's not a procession. That's the word they came up with.
Well, we can call it a procession.
Yeah, yeah, but procession of jobs. I mean, this is afflicting every sector that thought AI was going to destroy all this stuff. Uh-huh. It's all the bean counters are like, oh, well, we'll just take our chances, let everybody go, and hopefully we can dredge that up. And they'll be wrong about that, and they'll have to hire everybody back for 50% more.
Yeah,
that's happened. And software is cyclical. Like that happens all the time. So,
and maybe I won't like go to work for any of those places and continue the whole retirement thing, the retirement scheme that I like embarked on a couple years ago, and just work on useful stuff, open source software all the time, baby.
Yeah,
that's gonna be it.
You can pull that off. That'd be pretty cool.
And keyboards. I'm going to work on keyboard firmware. Dude, it kicks so much ass. Can you imagine? Like, here's my hand, and yet, what a thing to say. Jesus. All right.
Don't end that sentence now. I was on the edge of my seat.
Here's my hand, and yet, we're going to stagger the rows of the keyboard and not the columns. Why do we live in this world? We're going to change this world.
That's right.
One keyboard at a time. And the firmware needs updating too. So maybe I'll help with that. Or maybe I'll just go get a job working on Jobly, the React job board, coming soon. Actually, it's already here. So
it's already here. Stay tuned for version 2.
Yeah.
That seems like an optimistic enough note to end on. Unless you got anything else you want to cover.
That's it.
Ship it. Thank you, Matt, for being part of the Mac Nation Log.
My pleasure.